This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thank you for joining us on our radio Main Street all across North Dakota this time of day. And today we're all abuzz because what we've been talking about at Prairie Public is the Spring Member Drive. It's so important to us, and we know to you as well. I'm Doug Hamilton, of course, as I mentioned, with Ashley Thornburg here with me in studio, and our very own producer, Skip Wood, in the control room, and, you know, vital person here, vital part of the program.
Oh, absolutely.
The team that brings Main Street to you weekdays, and, of course, it comes to you because you've helped it happen. That's the important part of this. We look for members because we need members. We need financial support to provide the programs you like to hear on Prairie Public, and we're asking you to show your appreciation for all that hard work that goes into making this program by giving us a call at 800-359-4145. You listen because you enjoy Main Street, I assume, I hope. And we're asking for your help because listener support is the way we do business at Prairie Public.
And it starts with a phone call, 1-800-359-4145. You can also click and join at prairiepublic.org or text the word support to 484848 and click on the link we send you. Like you said, Doug, listener support is the way we do business. It's a business model that works for here. It's not a business model that works a lot of other places. I have yet to have my internet bill be whatever I decide to pay, but, you know, I get that with public radio. So in exchange for non-commercials, in exchange for no commercials, Prairie Public instead turns to our listeners to get this important revenue for all that you hear on air, on the smart speakers, on our streaming services. We are glad to be here. We're here because of you, and we want to say thank you. So give us a call, 1-800-359-4145, or click and join at prairiepublic.org.
Main Street is a labor of love for us. We actually really like coming to work and doing this because we think it's kind of important. We hope it's interesting to you, and we hope you are willing to invest in it to continue its production. We're interested in the people who make big differences for their communities across the state. That's why we talk to them. We're proud champions and cheerleaders of the arts of North Dakota. You probably hear quite a bit of arts-associated topics on this particular show. You'll hear about plays, film festivals, musical performances, operas, artists that are captivating, and they defy categorization, like Tiny Desk winner Galen Lee, who's been on our show
She's a couple of times.
So that's the kind of programming you're supporting. It's an hour of North Dakota-centric public affairs and human interest, and you make it possible by picking up the phone, 800-359-4145, online at prairiepublic.org.
Doug, you mentioned all of those interesting topics, plays, film festivals, musical performances. We also are talking to politicians, especially anyone seeking a statewide office. We're profiling the candidates. We're talking about the ballot measures. And I'm not talking 90 seconds. I'm talking 20, 25 minutes sometimes with these candidates. We bring you authors, chefs, poets, philanthropists, entrepreneurs from all over the world, and we give them time to talk beyond just a soundbite. We want to, I mean, we kind of think of our audience as that little fly on the wall. You know, there's conversations you wish you could hear sometimes. Well, you know, through this magic of turning on a button or saying, hey, smart speaker, you know, play this for me, you get to hear these conversations. Please call 1-800-359-4145. Click and join at prairiepublic.org or text the word support to 484848. And thanks.
Joining us now is Ben Kubishta. He's the creator of the North Dakota Scenic Byway Program, and Ashley Thornburg and I are going to talk to him about this very interesting project.
Ben, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
What inspired you to create the Scenic Byway Program, and how do you describe it?
Well, first we need to clear something up. I'm not the creator of the program. The Congress did.
Very good.
Subtle distinction.
Yeah. And if you really should go back 100 years, just a quick little history lesson. You know, when the roads first started coming across North Dakota, they were all named trails, and they really were for the tourists. There people were trying to get tourists into their towns. In 1923, the state marked our state highway system. In 27, the federal marking system came about. In 1929, there was a push from the state archaeologist in Tennessee to have a Lewis and Clark Highway from Tennessee all the way out to Pacific Coast. Then you jump ahead to the early 1960s. Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail was established by Congress. And also in the early 60s, the North Dakota State Highway Department did a scenic road study for the state of North Dakota that was about 4 inches thick.
Well, we've talked on our show before about the Old Red Trail, and the committee chair, Robin Reynolds, recommended that we talk to you.
Great. Yeah, Robin and the other folks in the Old Red, Old Ten are a great group to work with.
How were these byways selected after these that you just listed here? Because there are more than that in the state now.
Correct, yeah. So Congress established the Scenic Byway Program in 1991. Each state developed their own program. I coordinated it for the state DOT, and we had hired North Dakota Parks and Rec to do more of the day-to-day management. But there were six intrinsic qualities that you either need to meet a few of them or all of them to become a byway.
And what are those qualities?
Scenic.
Good one.
That's a bit subjective, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Cultural, historic, natural, archaeological, and recreational.
Wow. So you can push one or two of those buttons or all of them, huh?
That's correct, yeah. And our 10 byways in North Dakota have several of all of these qualities in them.
How do you like to approach the scenic byways? Do you like to go on one and give it some time, or do you like to combine two or three together on one road trip?
Well, it depends on which part of the state you're heading to. You know, if you head out of Fargo and you go west to Valley City or up to Pillsbury and then over to Lake Ashtabula, you can get the Cheyenne River Valley National Scenic Byway, drive it from Bald Hill Dam all the way down to Lisbon, and then you can go over into Lemoore County and drive that James River Byway all the way through. So you can get two there. And a lot of it is dependent upon where they're located at in the state. And we have some close enough to you can drive at least two in a day.
I noticed that there are maps on the NorthDakotaTourism.com site. The easiest way to find them is to just Google search North Dakota Scenic Byway Program. The thing that comes up first is the link to those maps and that description. Can someone just propose this idea? Can some communities in a part of the state where they think, you know, we're pretty scenic, we've got this cultural and historic stuff going on here, let's talk to the North Dakota Tourism Department about it.
Well, it's a bottom-up program with the folks in the communities putting together their proposals. They need a byway corridor management plan. But in 2012, Congress did eliminate funding for the byways, and North Dakota hasn't added any new byways since 2008. There is a move in Congress now, and I understand it has bipartisan support, to bring back the byway program.
Is all the funding or was all the funding federal, or were there state elements or even local?
In North Dakota, the funding was a combination of federal and local. Depending upon the road, the state would have some funding in signage and stuff, but overall it was a federal and local program.
Okay. Well, can you give us a sense of how much that might have cost a local community?
The funds you would have received for a project were 80% federal, 20% local. And you would submit an application to the state DOT, and then we'd have a committee that would review it and select projects. And there was also a submission to the Federal Highway Administration in Washington, and there was projects selected there also.
What does a scenic byway designation mean for the communities that are within that area?
The scenic byway designation for communities is an important. It shows the people of North Dakota and the people of the United States that these are important roads to drive because they're going to give you a sense of the whole state. You can travel through farmland up there on the Rendezvous Region Byway up in from Cavalier to Walhalla. You get to see the Pembina Gorge.
That's my neck of the woods.
Yeah, it's a great place up there. Turtle Mountain Byway, farmland down in the James River Byway. So it helps build a sense of community pride, and we see that along the Old Red, Old Ten, or the city governments in the local towns like New Salem, Glen Allen, Hebron, Richardson. They're all supportive of the byway.
Well, I did notice that when I checked the map that there's a sort of a lack of them in that corridor in the eastern band of the state from like Fargo to Grand Forks. So I'm assuming that's the Lake Agassiz Bottom Byway potentially, not terribly scenic.
It is, in a way, you know, the flat land of the Lake Agassiz Bottom is a beautiful place because in the Great Plains that we live, you know, it was talked about on Dakota Datebook a week or so ago.
Thank you.
The Big Sky Country, and North Dakota and the Great Plains really is the Big Sky Country because when you're out there on the prairies and you stop and get out of your car and you're just in awe of the surroundings.
Well, we do have spectacular sunsets, so we'll call it the Sunset Trail. How about that?
There you go.
Okay. Are these byways all marked?
Yes, they are. There's two signs. The bison sign, if you might have seen, is the state byway. And then there is a marking for the national scenic byways, of which we have two of those. Some byways have their own logo that's attached to the state or national byway sign.
Is there any kind of social media element to this? Like, yes, you can go on the North Dakota Tourism website or look for the signs just as you're driving, but I can see sort of a hashtag on Facebook or Instagram of people who, you know, saw Salem Sioux and want to tell other people.
Yeah, the Old Red, Old Ten Byway has a great Facebook page that gets used a lot, and you'll find comments on there from people who have new to the area that have driven that byway and how surprised they are. Because once you get off the interstate, you're in a whole new world.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned to us that the federal funding has gone away and that there used to be this 80-20 split of 80% federal and 20% local. What is the expense involved here? Is there special maintenance for these routes?
No. You know, the routes are either state highways, like Highway 22 is on the Four Bear-Kildare Mountain Byway, or county roads, like in the Rendezvous region up there in that Cavalier to Walhalla country. The counties and the state maintain their roads, and they fix them up on a regular basis, just like they need to do. You know, the signing is an expense that needs to be kept up, the route signing, because every once in a while somebody shoots them up or they might even steal a sign. Some of the big expenses might be maintaining some of the byway infrastructure, like the Cheyenne River National Scenic Byway has a lot of interpretive plaques along their byway that explain little sites along the way, like the Waitson Cabin, Bald Hill Dam, all kinds of fun stuff.
So that historic element or the cultural element or the nature element that you want to draw attention to might be on a plaque somewhere on one of these scenic byways.
That's correct. So there's a lot of plaques out there, and there's also what's called the Talking Trails, which the Old Red, Old Ten has. You can come up to, let's say, St. John's Church in Hebron, and there's a little sign there, and it tells you to dial this number, and you'll hear a story about St. John's Church.
Wow.
And you can also get that off of the website and other social media.
What are some of your favorite moments from traveling along any of the scenic byways?
Well, I enjoy every one of them, but one of my favorite moments might have been before we had scenic byways. One thing we did, my wife and I, we took our kids all over the state. And in the mid-1980s, we were up in the Walhalla area, and we wanted to drive the Pembina Gorge. And you get off the main county highway, and you start driving around. You're going down into the valley there. And the thought that came to my mind was, I'm going to come around a corner, see a guy sitting on a porch of his house with a one-eyed dog, a single-shot rifle, and he's whittling something.
Okay. Wow.
Little Appalachia to me. Has the program increased visitor traffic? I assume it has a, sort of a tourism angle to it.
Yes, it does. It has. The restaurant in Catherine, North Dakota, which has since closed because that lady at that time just was getting too busy, but a third of her business at one time was related to byway traffic.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah.
What's your vacation mentality, whether that's in North Dakota or wherever you go?
Well, I've been to the top of the mountains, the Rocky Mountains. I've had my feet in the ocean. My vacation mentality really would be to get out and enjoy the countryside.
Okay, well, that's what the Scenic Byway Program is all about. And Ben Kibishta, maybe you didn't create it, maybe Congress did, but you had a lot to do with it in North Dakota. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
You're most welcome. It was a pleasure.
Ben Kibishta, retired from the North Dakota Department of Transportation.
Always love to hear from a great lover of North Dakota. And look at Ben, traveled all over the state in all these little hidden pockets that most people have no idea even exist. Even in North Dakota, a lot of people don't know these places exist. That's the kind of story that we love to highlight on Main Street. We have a love of this state. We have a love of this people. We believe in programming that should be like when you look in a mirror, you want to see yourself in the mirror. Programming should reflect your life, your experience, and that comes down even to the landscape level. 1-800-359-4145 is the number to call to invest in quality programming. You can also go online to prairiepublic.org, and you can also text the word support to 484848. And when you do, tell us why you do. You like that we're not, you know, speed dating radio, and that we're all about. And Doug, well, you can just sing this part.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you. You appreciate that we let a topic germinate and wash all over you, and I don't sing all the time. You probably appreciate that. We don't get in and out of a conversation so quickly that your head was left spinning and you lost the meaning of what the guest was trying to convey. The human voice projects ideas, emotions, and on Main Street, we let those ideas expand into your consciousness because we know you're listening. And not, you know, it's not just stuff in the environment in the room. You're actually engaged in the program. So if you appreciate the meaningful conversation you experience every time you listen to Main Street, we ask that you support it with a membership contribution when you call 800-359-4145 or go to prairiepublic.org or text the word support to 484848 and open the link.
That number again, 1-800-359-4145, or you can also go to prairiepublic.org. And have you noticed that nowhere in this appeal are we saying, okay, and now your total comes to $79.95? Well, because we don't send you a bill for some amount that we decide. The beauty of this public radio business model is you get to decide. You are in control of this relationship here, not just because you could literally turn off the radio when you don't want to hear us anymore, but that you get to decide what works in your budget and how much you appreciate. If you're listening on the porch, sipping lemonade or wine in the summer, think about your listening habits and then just take a little bit of time to decide what that's worth to you. And then that can be your contribution amount. 1-800-359-4145 or prairiepublic.org.
Bruce Berg is one of the commentators we feature on Main Street. He lives in Jamestown, where for many years he taught English. Bruce still plies his craft by writing essays about his observations of life. And today, Bruce talks about card games.
My wife is an avid bridge player, and she finds women her age who have the same enthusiasm for the game. I used to know a number of men who played bridge, but those men are harder to find now. As the men's players' ranks have thinned, the women have also noted that a younger generation is turning to pinochle. My wife thinks that bridge is perhaps on the way out. Card games vary so much from family to family. I have friends who have hardly known a week that somebody at their table hasn't made with the shuffle. Next door is a family that couldn't tell the ace of spades from a joker. I'm sure that we've all known families that saw card games as a sin, used to part participants for money, and they could find a Bible verse that says card games are bad, be the game rummy or poker. Speaking of poker, when I was a much younger man, I absorbed the concept that poker was the manly game to play. I still like to play whist, but if I mention the game in a number of circles, I'm quite sure that the rolling of the eyes is not a product of my imagination. I'm not sure if choice of card games tells anything about people. Bridge seems to be played by the prim and the proper, while poker's image is one of rolled sleeves and a dangling cigarette. The degrees of bridge suggest IQ, while poker implies aggression, chutzpah, and a guy who has to tell his wife, "We no longer own this house." Can whist and pinochle players be known in a like manner? A little bit of truth or just simple cliché? And I conclude with perhaps the least important card question. Whatever happened to Canasta? This is Bruce Berg, Jamestown.
Coming up, we'll talk with Agriculture Commissioner Doug Goring about the Hunger-Free North Dakota Coalition's Garden Project. That's coming up. And, of course, we'll remind you of our spring member drive as well. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. State and local leaders gathered in Grand Forks today to celebrate North Dakota's $33 million investment in the UAS industry. Most of the money in House Bill 1018 will be used toward building infrastructure to support operations to fly drones beyond the line of sight pilot, the sight of the pilot. Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford says the commitment solidifies North Dakota's standing as UAS leader. $3 million of the total will go toward Grand Sky infrastructure, while $2 million will support the Northern Plains UAS test site in Grand Forks. Northern Plains Executive Director Nick Flum says the investment provides tools that no one else has. The new commitment brings the state's total investment in UAS research and development to $77 million. The state mill and elevator in Grand Forks is putting the finishing touches on a new shuttle train facility. The mill is the only state-owned milling facility in the United States and also has it's also the largest flour mill in the country. And WBI Energy is proposing to build a 60-mile-long, 20-inch diameter natural gas pipeline from WBI's Tioga Compressor Station to an interconnection with the Northern Border Pipeline south of Watford City. The Division of MDU Resources plans to build a new natural gas compressor station near that interconnection, and it plans to construct 20 miles of 12-inch diameter pipeline from the Tioga Station to a receipt station. WBI spokesperson Laura Luter says the company plans to file with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission this month. The cost for that is $220 million. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg and producer Skip Wood, who's running the board and keeping everything on time. We appreciate that. You're listening to Main Street, of course, and we hope you enjoy the show every time you listen because that's what we work for. We aim to bring you diverse voices and highlight all the folks who are working to make a difference across North Dakota, eastern Montana, and northwest Minnesota. So that means we cover a lot of geography, and we try to showcase interesting things that are happening around here. And the way you support that is by becoming a member, right, Ashley?
Absolutely. 1-800-359-4145 is the number to become a member or change your membership giving level. You can also do this at prairiepublic.org or by texting the word support to 484848. And that is because this is our spring member drive. So instead of commercials all of the time, just a couple times a year we come to you and ask for your support. It's been really amazing year on Main Street with the StoryCorps coming, and we just got to get so involved and hands-on with these stories of North Dakotans, by North Dakotans, for North Dakotans. Proud to present those beautiful conversations to you that that took place in the StoryCorps Airstream trailer. You made that happen with your investment at 1-800-359-4145.
We're also very pleased to have debuted a new food feature from the fun food expert with the infectious laugh, Sue Balcom. That's Main Street
She's
Eats. You
fabulous.
You hear it at Thursdays typically on Main Street. We introduced you to a new podcast called Breaking Barriers, Harvesting LGBTQ Stories on the Northern Plains. We are pleased to bring all of this to you, but it can only happen when you help pay for the radio waves, the microwaves that allow us to send files between our various studios around the state, the staff, you know, we do work here, both on air and administrative, the transmitters that dot our state, that the newly redesigned website. All of this, you know, is an investment in you, in the quality of the programming that goes to you, and what we ask you to do is reflect that by becoming a member. Your membership dollars, together with others, provide reliable funding. But as you know, in your own life, expenses go up, and that's why we're calling on new folks, new members, joining the Main Street family.
And you can do so by calling 1-800-359-4145 or clicking and joining at prairiepublic.org or by texting the word support to 484848. And this spring membership drive, we're so excited to have this partnership with Newman's Own. I love their salad dressing, and now I get to love them on an even bigger level here because they are matching dollar for dollar all new sustaining memberships. So I think of this, if you went to an ATM and you took out $20 and it gave you $40.
Heck of a
that's
deal.
That's nice. Yeah, yep. Right? So if you are giving $20 a month, Newman's Own is going to also put in $20 a month. So then by the time it gets to us, it's worth $40 a month. 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org or grab that smartphone, send a text message. It's just simple. It's the word support, and the number to send that to is 484848, and click on the link that we send you. And many thanks. Thanks.
Joining us now is Doug Goring. He's the North Dakota Commissioner of Agriculture. He joins us from our studio in Bismarck, and Doug is going to talk to us about the Hunger Free North Dakota Coalition and its garden project. Thanks for being with us, Doug.
Thank you for having me.
This Hunger Free North Dakota Coalition is something we've been collaborating with that group for the past few months to highlight various aspects of the program. And I know you've been in on the ground floor, so give us a sense of tell our listeners more about the coalition itself.
Well, the coalition is a group of those individuals and organizations, associations that certainly see a need and are very compassionate about people in need. So when you think about 1 in 9 people in North Dakota seek food assistance from charitable feeding programs every year, that kind of tugs at your heartstrings. But what even takes it a step further, 37% of those are children, 12% are seniors. Those that are most vulnerable in our society shouldn't have to be hungry in a state and a country that produces so much. So this effort to try and reach those that have something to see if they would be able to provide it to those that don't, and then count on all of these good people to help distribute. I mean, we look at a good partner of ours, Great Plains Food Bank. They've just been fantastic from the beginning. I mean, we started out saying, you know what, let's see if we can look at the Hunger Food or the Hunger Free Garden Project and encourage people to plant an extra row of something and maybe an extra row of everything and see if we can actually distribute that, get it moved into food pantries, soup kitchens. And as time kind of progressed, our program evolved to understand and recognize that we have senior programs out there. We have domestic violence shelters. We have addiction centers. Any of those types of entities out there that help others and provide, what a way to get it to them. And Great Plains Food Bank was really great about the logistical end, so they could actually move some things in and around. The other thing that's been interesting is Great Plains Food Bank has continued to just grow every year. I mean, at record levels. We've been doing this for 10 years. And last year, Great Plains Food Bank, with all the recognition and notoriety and awareness that's been raised, they were able to distribute 14.9 million pounds of food.
Wow.
That equals 12.5 million meals. I mean, they have a great network. As a partner, they partner with about 205 agencies, associations, organizations, and 109 communities, you know, in the upper Midwest and in North Dakota. So our efforts to grow a little more food, especially vegetables and fruits, things that people have very little access to, or at least it's very costly in the store, what a good way to make sure that they're getting some healthy, fresh, good food here in North Dakota.
The Great Plains Food Bank, is that a critical coalition member here in terms of the logistics of doing this, of getting
they
all
are.
These disparate connections made and food distributed?
They are, because they do have access to all the soup kitchens, the food pantries, and they make sure that if we can, for example, we got potatoes 1 year from some gracious supplier in the eastern part of the state. They helped distribute those throughout the state. We've also had some after they heard about our sweet corn project here in central North Dakota and actually on my farm and land that we rent to distribute that throughout the state. And it's grown leaps and bounds. We also, to try and encourage more awareness and get more involvement from people, we've tried to set some goals. So in the last year, we set a goal of 250,000 pounds. We're setting that same goal going forward this year at 250,000 pounds of fruits and vegetables, and which would equate to about 1 million servings of vegetables for people here in North Dakota.
Wow. So who can participate? Anybody?
Anybody. And I think that's the beauty of it. If you grow, and I don't want to seem so minor or meager about this, but if you grow one potted plant and you produce two or three extra peppers, for example, get a hold of somebody at one of the food pantries and soup kitchens. It's amazing. They'll cut them up. They'll provide them when they're providing soup, or maybe they'll put them into the soup. There's all kinds of things that can be done. When you aggregate all this, it actually makes a big difference, even though somebody might think it doesn't. It really, really does, and we just encourage people to do that. The other thing is partnering with and asking Extension to work with growers and gardeners to address some of the challenges they have or help them understand how they might be able to produce more has certainly taken us to that next level also.
I was just reminded that this is sort of like membership for Prairie Public. You know, it takes a village. We all have to kind of chip in a little bit to help everybody come along.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We are talking about food that is perishable, though. Garden food, I mean, potatoes can last a while in cold storage, but how do you deal with that issue?
Well, you bring up a great point. That's probably why it's in such need is it's a perishable product. It has to travel a long distance sometimes of the year to get here. And the quality might be of a lower quality, and we might have challenges. So for us to really look at getting this out and about in a timely manner, it means coordinating. It means working with all those that are growing it to see, you know, when are you going to be harvesting? If you are harvesting, it's good to get a heads up so that at least we can get it distributed in the local area. If we have larger amounts, it's a great opportunity to contact our partners at Great Plains Food Bank and have them coordinate with us and the grower and others that are involved so that they can get it distributed throughout the state.
Now, it would seem that farmers' markets around the state, that there would be certain times of the summer, the growing season, when certain crops would come in, like tomatoes late in the summer. Is that the case?
Well, it is, and we do have some people that start earlier too, so that's kind of nice. We have a few more hoop houses out there, and there's some that actually start some of their vegetable production in the house and then move it outside later on. So we can sometimes get production earlier, but again, we also have those that are trying to make a living off from this. So it helps when you work with the farmers' markets, the growers, and the producers out there. They may take some extra produce out and about and to some of those soup kitchens and food pantries.
Well, for people who want to do a little investigation of the program, it's easy to find if you just Google NDDA Hunger Free, NDDA, North Dakota Department of Agriculture, Hunger Free. And you'll come up on a web page that actually provides a fair amount of information. Do you need more distribution sites? Because I saw a map up there, and there are parts of the state that look like they're a little spare.
Yeah, they almost look like a food desert, don't they? And we actually refer to them in that matter. So something unique, and I'm so proud of this, we have an interactive map that we use for production agriculture, which identifies apiaries or those bee yards and hives. It also identifies vineyards. It identifies organic production throughout the state. And we do that so people are aware of where this is at. So if they're spraying in the area or you have other commercial operations going on, they know that those are sensitive areas. We took that map concept and we developed it and took it a step further. And the map that we have for this Hunger Free talks about the farmers and ranchers that market directly. It also looks at produce donation sites. And sometimes if you get on here and you're not quite sure what that means, call us or look further into the legend. It might tell you if it's a soup kitchen, if it's a senior center, maybe it's a food pantry. You can also get further into it and you can look at roadside stands, but to your point, you're exactly right. We have parts of the state that don't really have a whole lot. Some of that may be because of the area it's in. If they're trying to grow a lot of produce, you know, out in the countryside where it's a little bit drier climate, they're going to be challenged a little bit more. But we hope to encourage people just to continue to look at doing anything in their backyard and helping out in these communities.
Well, when I was up on the site looking at that map, I noted there were community gardens there too, and that's kind of catching on around the state. Certainly it's popular in the Fargo-Moorhead area and Bismarck-Mandan as well. Is this a potential growth area? I mean, these are community gardens. They might have a bit of overabundance.
Yeah, those are other places that we've worked with those communities to see. And again, we don't force anybody to do anything, but we just ask them if you would participate with us. That would be great. We know where you can take some of this. If you have a lot of produce and all of you guys are kind of working together, let us know, because we very much would love to get a hold of somebody that can help distribute this throughout the state or in throughout the communities too.
Well, we had a brutal winter, as we all remember, because it's not that long ago. And May has been a bit chilly so far. This is usually near the end of May is typically when people start putting their gardens in outside anyway. So this is planting month. It's time to get the word out, right?
It is. And again, it's nice to encourage people to think about if you have a little extra room in there, Can you plant a little extra? Can you just plan on that being something else for somebody else? Maybe it's even in your community. If you know somebody, a neighbor, that maybe they're shut in, maybe they're elderly, and they might enjoy and appreciate some of this. Maybe they would like some tomatoes, some peppers. Some people still plant potatoes, although they take up quite a bit of room and you need a lot of care and management there. Those are things that you might be able to get to some of those shut-ins that exist in your community, in your neighborhood. The other thing that I like about this is in some of these communities, we've had people just from raising the awareness become a little more compassionate and sensitive to others' needs, and you start to see them bring things to the senior centers. And I love that because those people appreciate it so much, and they're really in need of some of this great food that's being produced.
Now, we do have programs to recycle or redistribute, I should say, extra restaurant food and that kind of thing, and occasionally from the produce aisles of supermarkets. Is that part of this program too?
This isn't, but I do, and I'm very well aware, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because I know that they have relationships with Great Plains Food Bank where they will actually donate some of their items, even if it's a damaged can, and sometimes people might turn their nose up to that, but there's nothing wrong with it. And they just know that it may not market well sitting on their shelf, so they get it over to Great Plains Food Bank, and Great Plains Food Bank distributes a lot of that. I also am aware that we have a handful of restaurants in our communities that do reach out, do work with the soup kitchens, provide them some products, and sometimes even some extra food, and I think that's great.
You mentioned that 37% of the recipients of this food are kids, that one out of nine North Dakotans is eligible for this. So, and the fact that this has grown over the 10-year period since it all started, is it meeting the need?
I don't believe so. I think it's a great effort. I think we have to continue on. We still, I believe that there are some out there that don't even seek this type of assistance or help. And it may be a pride thing. It may be a lack of knowledge or awareness. But it's an opportunity for us to keep doing it, raising awareness, and even getting out, you know, the numbers when you talk about how much or, you know, what our goals are and what we've actually done. It gets people thinking that, you know what, there are others out there that care and they can provide something, and maybe we'll just go check it out.
So is hunger free an achievable goal?
Well, the nice thing about goals, sometimes they're difficult to achieve, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't continue to strive, you know, to meet that goal.
We've been talking a bit about, you know, planting another row of this and the seasonality of the growing season, that kind of thing. If you were to make some recommendations out there for people who are thinking of adding another row of something or growing for the garden project, what would you like them to plant?
Well, I got a bias, so it probably, I'm not a tomato guy. I love tomato soup and I love ketchup. My wife just loves tomatoes herself. Cucumbers for pickling, squash. Oh, people love squash. There's different types of squash. I love squash. Peppers. I'm a pepper guy. I probably said that earlier. Onions. Onions seem to always be in demand. People use them to, you know, really accentuate the other food that they're making. I do not have a preference for zucchini, but I know some people do.
Yeah.
And you can almost get it free any time. In fact, I tell people, instead of leaving it on my doorstep or in my vehicle if I left the car unlocked.
That's the
joke.
Know,
there's a soup kitchen around here. I'm sure they could use it. But there are so many different things, and sometimes even the unique things. We plant chives in our garden. But we use that for ourselves. I would think that if someone wanted to even donate something like that, even to a soup kitchen or a seniors center, man, could they use that. People love that kind of fresh stuff.
Doug Goring is the North Dakota Commissioner of Agriculture. We've been talking about Hunger-Free North Dakota's Garden Project. You can find out more by Googling NDDA Hunger-Free. Doug, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
My name is Sarah Trone, and I've been listening to Prairie Public pretty much for my entire life. I grew up in western North Dakota, and I remember my parents listening to it when we would take car trips back to Fargo and up to the Devil's Lake area to see my grandparents. And while I probably wasn't as appreciative of it when I was 10, 11, 12, when I moved to Williston, I really started listening to it because I wanted an unbiased news source. And so at that point, I became a NPR nerd, big time. Scheduled listening time on Saturday mornings starting at 9 a.m. I'm in my sewing room working on crafty, creative, fun projects, but I'm listening to all the programs that air Saturday morning into the early afternoon because they're informative, they're hilarious in a lot of cases, and I'm still learning something.
You can support the programs you love on Prairie Public by becoming a sustaining member. It's easy. Just go to prairiepublic.org, call 800-359-4145, or text the word support to 484848 and click on the link.
From the moment you wake up through the chaos of your busy morning, Morning Edition is there with you.
Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep.
Through All You Have to Do, we'll bring you all you need to know on Morning Edition from NPR News.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 6th. North Dakota remembers Theodore Roosevelt, featuring the words of Roosevelt as performed by Steve Stark. This is National Music Week, and though it wasn't yet established when Theodore Roosevelt was president, music was prominent during his time in office. Whether in North Dakota or across the nation, he relished leading crowds in singing Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight, a favorite of the Rough Riders. He was also smitten with America's traditional patriotic melodies. T.R.'s White House repertoire was more symphonic and unparalleled at the dawn of the 20th century with musical events throughout the year. Regular Friday night performances in the East Room regaled up to 350 invited guests with the talents of renowned musicians. The now-celebrated Gold Steinway grand piano, with its gilded inlaid decorations, was a gift to the White House in 1903 on Steinway's 50th anniversary. Steinway himself is said to have helped book the talent for the Roosevelts. 35 years later, another Steinway was given to the Franklin Roosevelt White House, replacing Teddy's, which was donated to the Smithsonian. T.R.'s concerts featured the first clavichord performance, operas, pianists, and symphony orchestras of worldwide stature. Scott Joplin's Maple Leaf Rag was performed there at Alice Roosevelt's request, thus introducing jazz. Young cellist Pablo Casals performed in 1904. He returned to the White House in 1960 for the Kennedys. T.R. was also the subject of hundreds of songs written about him during his life and after his death.
Nothing can add more to our capacity for healthy social enjoyment than to encourage the formation of societies which, by their cultivation of music, vocal and instrumental, give great lift to the artistic side, the aesthetic side of our nature. This is especially true when we remember that no man is going to go very far wrong if he belongs to a society where he can take his wife with him to enjoy it.
Today's Dakota Datebook was written and performed by Steve Stark. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
The man they hanged the door. He'd lick the king in any ring. Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray! Hooray for Theodore!
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the Historical Society of North Dakota. This series with funding from the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
President Trump has threatened to impose more tariffs on Chinese goods, escalating a long trade war. What's the origin story of Trump's tough stance on China? Well, opinions differ.
The president's eyes were wide open, and so were all the members of his cabinet.
If he said that, he's a stone-cold liar.
The bitter fight over tariffs inside the White House on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Just a couple of minutes left in Main Street for this Monday show. And, of course, we're reminding you that we are in our spring member drive. And Ashley Thornburg and I want to put together whatever group of words we can to inspire those of you who are listening now and have thought about membership to become members. And one of those things that we might get you to go to the phone or go online for is that you might, get a pair of tickets. At $15 a month as a sustaining member, you could get it doubled with the Newman's Own match and power Prairie Public with an extra $180. And with that $15 a month sustaining membership, pick up a pair of tickets to see The Moth, their live storytelling event in Fargo this November. And those tickets are going fast, so you might want to hurry.
Oh, absolutely. I was paying attention to the calls coming in this morning and looking at what came in over the weekend, and pair after pair of tickets to The Moth going out the door here because this is their first visit into North Dakota. 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org. The Moth is just, I mean, the reason that they call it that is because moths are attracted to a light, and this is sort of like storytelling that is just you stop what you're doing to listen to the way that these stories are told. They're inspiring, moving, sometimes laugh out loud, funny. Sometimes it's everyday people. Sometimes it's celebrities. The point is you're all up there on a stage and telling this story, going outside your comfort zone maybe. That's an incredible power that radio has, that both immediacy and intimacy, that combination is really incredible. 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org.
It's always free for you to hear, but it's not free to bring to your ears. We have dues for national shows, salaries for our committed staff, radio towers and transmitters cost money to support, a new website, reliable apps you can hear worldwide. So this all adds up. 1-800-359-4145 or prairiepublic.org.
And, of course, we still have lots of programming throughout the week. We wouldn't want to leave you without a lot of great guests. Doug, who do we have coming up tomorrow?
Searching for Life in the Universe was the title of a recent presentation at Minnesota State University Moorhead by Dr. Terry Oswalt of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. And on Tuesday, he joins us to discuss the search for life off our planet, and it's mind-blowing. Tom Eason will share a Plains Folk essay titled Chemical Plains tomorrow, and our director of radio, Bill Thomas, will discuss the many podcasts now available from Prairie Public, another membership value, if you will. So I hope you'll join us for Main Street on Tuesday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.